Welcome to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. For the next hour, we'll be your local real estate news magazine. I am Mark Schneidman, your local realtor since 88 with Coldwell Banker, Santa Barbara resident since 77, here with talent on loan from the California Department of Real Estate. As usual, my weekly multiple listing update in the fourth segment, tracking median home price sales weekly, year to date, and the current active inventory, all compared to last year's numbers. And we'll recap also the first 6.5, 7 months of the year compared to the last few years. You can call us at 564-1290. 564-1290 is the studio number on Monday mornings for the live broadcast. Thereafter, you can call me after the program at 452-2428-452-CHAT. But that's the skinny on the basics on how to contact us. Now, there was a letter to the editor in this morning's news press about commenting on a Peter Schrag. Did I pronounce his name? Schrag. Sorry. About a Peter Schrag column that was back July 22nd, and it was in today's paper. And I, coincidentally, today's guest is Peter Schrag. Good morning and welcome to Radio Real Estate. Peter, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
Thank you so much for joining us down here in Santa Barbara, where your columns appear periodically, along with your cohorts, Dan Walters and Dan, what's the other guy's name?
Daniel Weintraub.
Yeah. Now the three, and you're Peter Schrag.
Right.
Now the three of you, do you hang out together?
No, we don't. But I mean, I know them. I know them both, and I see them occasionally, but we don't hang out together.
Is there some animosity between the three of you that we should know about?
No, I don't think so. We have different points of view, but we do our own. Each of us does his own thing, and I don't think there's any animosity.
Well, I don't want to start any rumors. You know, I'm just giving you a hard time here now.
No, there's no animosity.
Good. Now I've met Dan Walters.
Okay.
He's down here. He's been here for a few years speaking to the UCSB Economic Forecast project.
Okay.
And so one time I spoke to him after the program and talked to him about coming on the program, so that might happen down the road. And then in addition to your wonderful article that we're going to get in today, today's main topic with Peter is his column on Proposition 90 and eminent domain.
Right.
And a very, very interesting hot topic, and you had some very interesting things to say that I want you to explain further. But Daniel Weintraub had an interesting article on the new electric meters for consumers, and I found that kind of interesting. And
that's been something that's been pushed by energy experts for years, and beginning at least as far back as the energy crisis of 2000, that we ought to have real-time metering.
Right, yeah. Right. It makes a lot of sense. You kind of confused me. We were communicating via emails, and you end your emails with P.S.
Right.
For Peter Schrag,
right.
But I kept looking for the postscript. I thought there was something else.
It's just Peter Schrag, all.
I thought there was something missing, so I'm glad we could clarify that. So what I want to talk about is, what is Proposition 90? What is it trying to accomplish? And then, of course, what are the additional aspects of it that you feel go over the top and could cause problems?
Well, I mean, it clearly is a response, as many other efforts in other states are, to the Kelo decision, which I'm sure you've discussed before, which is the decision in which the Supreme Court upheld the efforts of the city of New London, Connecticut, to take private property, in this case, some homes, as part of a redevelopment project, and deliver that that property to a private developer for essentially a major commercial project. It was actually a mixed-use project. I think it was both commercial and residential, but much higher level of use, obviously in the attempt to raise tax revenues for that parcel of land. A number of the, or at least one homeowner, challenged and said that it was unconstitutional to seize private property, deliver it to another private entity. The court upheld New London on it in a fairly narrow decision, and that Kelo decision has reverberated around the country, and this is one of the responses to that decision. In fact, in California, while there has been obviously the use of eminent domain to take property, the California law says the property has to be blighted before it can be condemned. Now, in a number of cases, municipalities or redevelopment agencies have stretched the definition of blighted and have in fact seized perfectly good property, both residential and commercial. But those instances are not very common. But they have occurred.
Right, and you're reflecting what I had read, that California has different laws in Connecticut that should preclude the Kelo decision from happening here. So some people might say, well, maybe we don't need to fix what's not broken. We already have more built-in protections for private property owners.
Some of the opponents of Prop 90 do say that, and it's, as I say, at the margins. It's been stretched and abused, the blighted definition, but I think there would be easier fixes for it by basically making the blighted definition more distinct, more clear, so those abuses couldn't take place. But then
there's two factors. There's, you know, is it blighted or isn't it blighted? Can we take it? You know, does it fall into this category? And then, what are we going to do with it? Is it going to go, as you put, you know, to public use? And according to your article, is public use, I guess, does that include affordable housing and convention centers versus
yes,
parks
does.
And schools?
Yes, the public use does include affordable housing and convention centers as long as they're run and owned by a public entity. So if the public housing is owned by the city of, let's say, Santa Barbara or whatever, or is owned by a county or by the state or by a then it seems to be okay under the public use definition. But if the county or the city turns the housing project over to, let's say, a church or some other non-public entity, a private entity, then under the Prop 90 it would not be regarded as public use. It might be public purpose. And there's a distinction in the law on that, but it would not be regarded as public use. So
now, does that aspect of this proposition, does that sit well with you?
Well, I think that's one of the things that I think some of the opponents are raising as a problem, because they say, and perhaps correctly, and it's kind of an irony here anyway, but they say perhaps correctly that in some cases private entities like a church or like a housing collaborative or something like that might be more efficient and effective in running a public housing project. And it doesn't have to be necessarily low income, can be mixed income housing, might be more experienced and effective in running such a thing than the city or the county or whoever it is. And it's one of the things that's kind of interesting, because in the name of protecting private property, which of course this is purportedly intended to do, it then says that in order for a seizure to be kosher, it has to go to a public entity.
Which might not be the most efficient.
And if you're a believer in private enterprise, or you're kind of suspicious of government, that's not necessarily what you might want, but that's a whole side issue.
That's a side issue. Of course, from the get-go, is if you don't take the private property from the first place, you don't have that dilemma.
That's correct. But I think the major problem with Prop 90 is not so much the eminent domain issues as it is the takings issue, which is a different thing. And that and takings essentially means that if a city or a county or the state or whoever it is passes regulations that damage or that in some way would reduce the value of private property, then there might be a claim by the property owner against the public entity for depreciating the value of his property. And that's, and I think that's where the real objections to Prop 90 come in.
Yeah. Now, is this the part where you reference about the value of the land in which the government intends to put the property? Is that what you're talking about,
no,
or are you
talking
about something else?
I'm talking about this. I own a piece of real estate. And let's say the piece of real estate, let's say it's just undeveloped land. It's farm acreage or whatever it is. And I'm holding it, maybe speculative, in the hope that I can sell it to a developer. And then along comes a public entity and says, you can't, we're trying to protect some environmental purpose. We're trying to, whatever it is. And therefore, you can only build so many homes per acre because it will be too much of a strain on, let's say, water resources or whatever it is. And I'm hoping to sell it to a developer that is going to put more denser housing on that property.
And you would sell it to a developer. Is it currently zoned for dense housing?
No, that's the point. Is that let's say you downzone it, and that's of course, and that's specifically mentioned in the bill, in the initiative.
The bill allows.
No, the bill says that when there's downzoning that would reduce the value of the property, that can be listed as a that can be defined as a damage to the property owner. So it would impede all kinds of regulation. The same thing would be true if you owned, let's say, some real estate in a city and they built a school or a university campus within, let's say, 8 or 10 blocks of your property, and the city then decided that it was not going to allow, as in fact is the case, let's say the operation of a liquor store within a mile of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
That could then be regarded as a damaging of your property because it would reduce the value of your property because, obviously, you know, because you might say, well, I really was planning to open a liquor store here.
Okay, so you're speaking in the sense of if Prop 90 passes, this would what could happen.
That's
These are
correct.
The scenarios,
that's
not
correct.
The current scenario.
No. That's what could happen under Prop 90. That's right.
So it would be considered a taking if I own some property and it's zoned for a liquor store.
Yeah, if it's zoned for commercial, let's say it's commercial zoning, and maybe there's even a store in there now, but it's something else, it's a grocery or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to then lease it to or turn it into a liquor store. And if the zoning or new regulations then prohibited that, that might reduce the value of the property.
So it's a two-prong thing. So now we're talking about kicking mom and dad out of their home for 70 years or
that's
50
right.
years.
Right.
But now we're talking about maybe mom and pop who live above the store. That's a little grocery store, and they want to start selling liquor.
Right.
And it's zoned for that currently. So now we're going to change the zoning, and so now we're trying to compensate them.
That's correct.
How does that sound to you? Does that sound too far-reaching?
Well, mom and pop, or whoever it is, it may not. I mean, you know, we can. It could be mom and pop, and it could be, you know, it could be a major property owner, whatever it is.
Right. Well, I want you to know, Peter, I particularly took the mom and pop example because in your article, you used the slumlord example.
Well, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. And of course, you have to keep in mind that originally redevelopment and the whole idea of redevelopment was based on the notion that you would take a rundown property and redevelop it for higher uses and so on. The slumlord may also have been putting my thumb on the scale. That's true,
Peter. That's okay. I am open because I'm trying to learn about this, and I appreciate you discussing. But speaking of taking, we have some commercials we have to play. They're taking my time,
okay,
and our airtime, and I really resent it. But we're going to have to play it anyway. But why don't you hang on?
Okay.
And we'll talk a little bit more about Proposition 90, eminent domain, taking of property. We're talking with Peter Schrag, who's nice enough to join us. He's a full-time columnist at the Sacramento Bee, and he appears locally in the Santa Barbara News Press. So you stay tuned. You'll be right back. And remember, our phone number is 564-1290, 564-1290.